Blog Talk Radio.
Dobro jutro. Good morning. Bonjour. Welcome to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio, the world's largest social network, reaching listeners not only locally, but imagine reaching listeners in any country in the world. By the click of Z button, you can discover what America has to say. We have an exciting show for you today. But before I introduce and welcome my guests, let me remind you that my email address is kathystudio@sbcglobal.net. And Kathy is spelled with C-A-T-H-I. kathystudio@sbcglobal.net. And you could write to me, Post Office Box 95913, Hoffman Estates, Illinois, 60195. And then be sure and log on my web, kathywatsonspeaks.com and simplyageless.net. And be sure and click on all of the buttons. One of my staunch supporters of my marathon stair climbing are iron workers. And that's what today's show is all about. Man's quest for power and prosperity have fueled building developers' ambition to build ever taller buildings, soaring upward to the heavens. Buildings, towers that have defined cities flavored with ingenuity and declaring their reach to spiraling heights of grandeur. Iron workers are a breed unto themselves. They're visionaries, co-creators of structures that without iron workers would not be standing today. You're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm going to say good morning.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning, Kathy.
Well, my two favorite guys, Walter Weiss, the general president of Iron Workers International, and Kevin Hilton, the CEO of Impact. Now, I just wanted to ask one question. I know that you're just dying to get started and sharing your expertise with my listeners, but can a gal from the world of classical ballet and haute couture find happiness with an iron worker?
Oh, I think that's without a doubt, Kathy.
Really?
People from all walks of life find happiness with iron workers.
Oh, really? Tell
yes.
Me, what traits do iron workers have that capture the hearts and the souls of the females?
Well, I think we are a unique breed. I think we're a very independent breed. I think, many times that's attractive. We're also probably the best-looking people in the building trade.
Okay.
Hey, Kathy, you know it goes both ways. There are women iron workers now.
I realize that, but just before I turn the microphone over to you, I had an interesting conversation. I had to order some product over the phone, and this gal, we just started to talk, and she wanted to know what I did, and I said, of course, you know, classical ballet, haute couture, and I married an iron worker. Oh, she said, you want to know what? I am dating an iron worker. Really? And I guess he's an apprentice. I don't know. I was going to send them the CD of Iron Workers with a Noble Profession. And she said, could you give me some hints on how to really get along with him? And I said, listen to me. We have college versus the Domperion of trades, iron workers. You have the best of the breed, and that's all I said. Now, gentlemen, the show is yours.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Start off, of course, we'd like to, going into the Labor Day holiday, would just like to wish the best of everyone for a great holiday with their friends and with their families out there. It's the one day a year that was set aside to recognize what the fruits of labor can bring, and it has a very intriguing background as far as how it came about, but it took a lot of effort, took a lot of political power, it took the organizing of workers to basically put this holiday forth. And we like everybody to remember that Labor Day exists because of the work we do, the work that organized labor does, and it recognizes all workers in every branch out there, from the corporate boardrooms down to the people who serve and keep this country running every day. That's who Labor Day is devoted to, and we're just great to be a part of it.
And, you know, if I could chime in, Kathy, thinking about this, and, of course, you know, Labor Day to us in the labor movement has extra special meaning. But, you know, I grew up in the Detroit area, and that particular part of the country is really marked with the birth of a robust labor movement in the United States. And it goes back to the sit-down strikes in 1936 and the organization of the auto workers. And, of course, the building trades predate that by quite a bit. But it was a struggle. And I think that the, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, why do you do what you do? And it comes down to the one basic answer, and that's dignity. You know, all honest work is dignified, but you need, in my opinion, a union that will allow workers the opportunity to speak out when things are wrong. You know, yesterday we had a North American safety webcast, and one of the things General President Wise emphasized, and I think it's really, it's unique to our way of business, and when I say that, the labor management way of business is an iron worker, by virtue of the union, is allowed to speak up when something is unsafe and not do the work and not fear that he's going to lose his job because of it. Now, you show me where else that exists.
It doesn't. It doesn't. You complain in corporate America today, and you get the pink slip in most cases. Now, Kevin, I just have to back up a little bit. You said that you were from Detroit?
Yes.
No, no, Kevin. It's Detroit.
Oui, Ville Detroit.
We never say Detroit. It's Detroit. I'm looking at...
Parlez français?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, bonjour, au revoir, Alonzo Font. That's all I know of their national anthem. But, guys, I'm looking at the Iron Worker magazine, June-July 2014, and on page 21, there is a quote that just really resonates with what you're talking about today. The future of our union depends on growing through organizing. Now, how did all of that come about? The organization, and the freedom to speak out and not be fired, that you will not be penalized for sharing your views on anything that might be happening in the labor union today.
Well, Kathy, the iron workers were part of the larger labor movement that started back in the late 1800s, when we saw all of a sudden the conditions that existed in the country at that time. I mean, it was brutal working conditions. You had 6-12s was the standard work week. You had child labor. There was no holidays, no sick days, no pensions. Worker safety was virtually unheard of. And it was a time when the corporate power and the monopolies basically dominated. And the workers rallied together, stood up for themselves, and basically said, we're tired of this, and we're not going to take it anymore. And that's what it came down, and that's what the basis of the labor movement was all about, that, labor generates the profits of the companies. They deserved a fair share in those profits, and that's what collective bargaining is all about. And the iron workers were proud to be a part of that from our early beginnings.
Now, Walter, could we back up just a little bit? there's always someone that has to be the rabble-rouser. There always has to be one individual or perhaps a consortium of men who simply said, how did they get the epiphany to say, look, this is not right. We have to do something about what's happening. I've got the book here. I've gone back, way back into the 1800s, and that's when the federal holiday was created, and that was giving individuals a guaranteed day off. However, when you said that at that point, the working conditions and child labor, who said enough is enough and we've got to stop it?
Well, we had tremendous leaders at that time. You know, when you look back in the annals of history, you know, of course, there's always there's this Samuel Gompers and you know, the early Knights of Labor that was formed with Uriah Stevens and you know, a variety. But what it took was the solidarity of workers together, standing together. It was the mass of workers that finally said, this is enough. We're not going to take any more. And you're right. You know, Labor Day came in 1894 as a national holiday. But what some people don't recognize, it was really until we got 8-hour work day, the right to organize, all that didn't really come about until 50 years later. So Labor Day really represents the struggle, the fight that workers went through during that time, as opposed to any victory. And victory is still, you know, out there that we work towards. But that's what when I recognize Labor Day, that's what I look at. It represents the struggle, the fight that we had to gain recognition to empower ourselves as workers.
And, you know, I think it's important to realize that I think in my studies, I've formally studied industrial relations, and obviously I've worked at it for many, many years, is, you know, people join unions to protect themselves. It's just that simple, and it's protecting themselves against capricious management. And, you know, seeing the business world far and wide in my current situation, as well as previous professional roles, there's a lot of really untrained management, and it's not an indictment. It's just a lot of people, it's very typical that the hardest worker becomes a manager. That doesn't mean that they're good managers. That just means they're the hardest worker and they're recognized. Leadership is no one's a born leader. Very, very, very few people are born leaders. They have to be trained. But in the absence of good training, people will make very poor decisions. And I think if you read a lot of the academic literature, you'll see that a union really brings better management to an organization because it does not allow for an employer to act with caprice and just on a whim get rid of someone or because they're having a bad day invoke unjust discipline. You have to have systems and procedures. It's just like building a building or engineering a building. You have to have the systems in place to do it properly. Management is the same thing. And the labor movement supplies that level of organization and system to protect the workers and really empower managers to be a hell of a lot better than they would in the absence of it.
Mm-hmm. But there's so much training that has to go into it, and you have to have a sense of experience. I'm seeing it, I'm just going to digress for a moment, but I'm seeing it in so much of what is happening in the world today, in our politics, in the economics, everything. This could go on and on and on. Most people are not qualified to be running any great big country or any big corporation without having the experience, really getting to the grassroots of what's happening in America.
Well, I think, Kathy, what we saw, you know, up until the late 70s, the 80s, you know, the business model in this country was everybody works to make the company a success, to make the company profitable, and they would reap a share of the benefits. And that's what collective bargaining was all about. And then in the 80s, that model was broken. And since then, all of a sudden, that shared equity partnership in the businesses is gone. And it's not between us and our contractors because we're united as a team, and and building projects out there that presented ourselves to the people who own the facilities that we build. But, you know, you take a look at what all of a sudden what Wall Street has done in the pursuit of profits, unfair profits, higher bonuses at the expense of everybody else.
Okay, but Walter, back up. What happened in the 80s, the separation?
Basically, I think you saw the power of Wall Street in to influence companies. I think you saw the, of course, when we had the air traffic controller strike, that was almost as a symbolic spot of all of a sudden the turn in America. When they were went out and they were locked out, all of a sudden you saw the business take a lead from government that says, now we can go on the attack with unions. The government is going to be behind us. And that's what happened, and that's when you start to see the slide in the rights and in the powers that were allocated to labor all of a sudden start to be eroded and to be changed.
You know, it's interesting because if you look back, again, I'll draw on the area of the country I came from, you saw in the 1980s the car guys, you know, and whatever you think of Lee Iacocca, I always remember him saying that people, the car people, the car guys, don't run the car companies anymore. Wall Street runs the car companies. And the corporate leadership is constantly pandering to Wall Street because they want to influence the price of the equity of the company and the stock prices. And that is, it really is such a, like Walt said, a great kind of diversion from the traditional model that we work together, we succeed together. Will the captains of industry be more greatly rewarded? No question about it. But everybody shared in that benefit and that prosperity. And it's somewhere along the way between about 1980 and today, people started getting this perception that good hard work is really not worth that much. And it's really disturbing. And I think now you're starting to see America wake up to something that I can't believe I'm saying this, but the Europeans have known for years is the power of the apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, we live in a society where most kids really aren't inclined or maybe even qualified in some cases to go to college. That doesn't mean they shouldn't have a great life and you know, a home and decent health care and a pension when they retire. And this is what we provide here. You know, Walt hit on an earlier point. Most of our contractors are iron workers. They want to perpetuate this. They will perpetuate this. We just need them to be more successful, and we're doing everything we can to make them more successful so that on Labor Day weekend 100 years from now, 2114, we're bigger, we're stronger, we're more robust, and we provide better lives for those who work hard for them.
Most people don't understand that iron workers offer a full spectrum in career development, earn while you learn. I am amazed. And I have my pulse on what's happening with the seniors and, of course, the grasshoppers that are growing up. They don't understand that we're paving their future for generations to come. And you've heard me say time and time again that iron workers is the Dom Perignon of the trade. And I absolutely refuse to allow anyone to refer to them as blue-collar workers. We're all in this together. And if you want to go to college, fine. But don't waste it. I don't know if you're a trust fund baby or you've taken out a loan. But let's look at what happens after 4 years. You have all of these loans that you have to pay. And did you waste the time? Was there someone there guiding you, directing you? You know, you do not come into this world with a blueprint. And you don't come in with maturity. You don't come in with intelligence. You have to earn it. When you qualify with ironworking, You have to be trained. And it takes 4 years. And stop and think. After the 4 years, you don't have tuition to pay. Your health care is in place. Your pension is in place. And it stays with you for time and all eternity. When we think of Wall Street, when we think of this elite group, which, by the way, guys, I've never quite figured out who gave them the power, what separates them from the rest of us, the consumer. Is more ever going to be enough? The power and the greed is overwhelming, overwhelming. When you take on ironworking, and I know, I've been married to one for 61 years, and when Bob was in town with his girlfriend just last week, and we spent hours talking about the trade, and he said, Mom, it was just incredible. Actually, I grew up. I matured. I became the person that I am today because of the integrity and the leadership that I had privy to as an iron worker. Now, if you'll just give me a moment, I have to identify the show. You're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio, the world's largest social network, reaching listeners not only locally, but imagine reaching listeners in any country in the world, Australia, London, Malaysia, California, Detroit, Illinois. They all have privy to the thousands of shows and millions of listeners. You can email me at kathystudio@sbcglobal.net. Call me. I love to get calls from you, 847-882-8717, and then write me a letter. It could be a love letter, but be kind. If you digress or you disagree with anything that you feel does not resonate with you, I won't know unless you write to me, Post Office Box 95913, Hoffman Estates, Illinois 60195. And the websites, KathyWatsonSpeaks.com and SimplyAgeless.net. And we have the privilege and the honor of having Walter Weiss, General President of Ironworkers International, and Kevin Hilton, the CEO of Impact. You're on. It is your show. But before we go in, I need to ask you, what problems are we experiencing today?
We always strive to for safety on the job sites. You know, we want zero incidents. We don't want any iron workers injured. We don't want any iron workers killed on the job site. We work with our contractors hand in hand to make sure that happens within the industry. But overall, we're starting to see work pick up again. We're seeing projects that have been in the pipeline for literally 10 years all of a sudden start to take hold. We're still very frustrated with the lack of action in the capital regarding the infrastructure of this country. When you see bridges deteriorating, when you see the basic necessities of clean water, of waste treatment and everything falling behind, not being able to service the population, that means we have to step forward and rebuild this country. And the iron workers, we helped to build this country and rebuild it over the years, and we're ready and we're standing ready to rebuild it once again. But we have to have the public recognizes the need to invest in our infrastructure. We have to get that message through to Capitol Hill.
And how are you going to do that?
It takes the power of the people. We always advise our members. We want them to call their local representatives. We want the public to stand forth. You know, when you look at the issue of investing in our infrastructure, you have business, you have labor, you have everybody in favor of it, and still nothing is done on Capitol Hill. And it really comes down to battling ideologies there as opposed to what is necessary for the good of this country. And I think that's one thing that we have to fight to overcome. And the people can do that, and they can do that at the ballot box, and they can do it this November.
And, you know, Kathy, I would just add on to that relative to the challenges is we need more good iron worker employers. We have markets where we are not bidding the volume, and when we're not bidding the volume, that means we're not getting the work,
And when we're not getting the work, that means that iron workers aren't earning a good living.
Okay,
good
what market? Kevin, what markets are we not going in?
Oh, my goodness, Kathy, it's widespread. You know, it's not just the traditional southern states that are very anti-union. It's all over North America. I mean, you know, and I'm going from New England all the way around to the West Coast. There are very dramatically underserved markets. And right now, we're in the midst of going through and recruiting contractors, analyzing their business model, ensuring that they are super competitive. And in a lot of cases, I'm just going to tell you this, a lot of cases our contractors don't know how to sell themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they take for granted, well, you know, I was an iron worker. Everybody knows about the apprenticeship. Everybody knows about the value of the training that we get, the upgrade training that goes on constantly in North America to make sure that the guys in the field are safe and efficient and productive. The fact remains that almost nobody knows that. You know, the people close to it, General President Wise and his staff and most of our contractors know about it, but here's the deal. At the end of the day, you've got to go outside of your comfort zone, and you've got to tell corporate America, you've got to tell the general contractors, you've got to tell the construction managers, you've got to tell anybody who will listen, this is the value proposition we offer. And I think we have turned the corner. We got one hell of a long ways to go, but we're starting to penetrate those markets. We're starting to tell those people that control the work in America, whether it's industrial maintenance, whether it's the infrastructure that Walt talked about a moment ago, whether they're commercial office buildings in downtown Chicago or out in the hinterlands, we're starting to finally penetrate that clay layer where we can sit with those the money changers, the captains of industry, those that make the decisions about construction and industrial maintenance in our country, and they are now starting to wake up to the iron workers, not because they were born knowing this stuff or they should have been taught this in college, because we are telling them. For the first time in the history, we're telling them all about the value that we offer. And I'll tell you what, Kathy, it's exciting, but we need those contractors, and we need them to take off their hard hat and put on their businessman's hat, because they got to be sharp. We've got the tools. We can and we will do it, but they've got to be susceptible to that message.
Okay, now let's back up a little bit here. What change in your approach that all of a sudden you realized that this is what you needed to do to get the message out there? I need more clarity on the message and your plan of action. Now, before you answer that, I want to go back to, you said that you weren't doing so well in some of the markets that you really need to. Is it because your union?
No, it's because we don't have the contractors there. That's the bottom line. You know, we've analyzed certain markets, and you know, so you're based in the Chicagoland area.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of contractors there, a lot of good employers. They employ large local unions in the Chicagoland area in Northwest Indiana for a lot of guys to work. Where you have the contractors, you have people that are competing for work and getting the work. If you don't have the contractor base, you're not competing. You're not in the game. So there are areas where we just don't have the critical mass of contractors to make a big difference. Those are the many of the markets that we're concentrating on right now. You know, unfortunately, we are not armed with an army of business training specialists. We don't have an army of business development people or salesmen, so we have to be very strategic in where we look, and we have to be very efficient, and that's how we're approaching it. And we're we're building from the inside out. It's really exciting.
Yeah. Kathy, we've always delivered, our members, the iron workers, have always delivered great value to the job site and the jobs that we do. I mean, you can look all across of our nation of the landmark projects that our members have been able to erect. You know, the architects, the engineers, they dream these things up, but it's up to the iron worker to turn them into reality. We've always delivered that to the job sites. Now, our problem was we never made everybody aware of that. We never promoted the value we bring, the added value we bring from training, from everything else. And now our competition has given us a great opportunity because they failed to train the next generation of skilled craftsmen. They failed to maintain the construction industry as a viable career for young people, and now all that's coming home to roost. And the demand out there for skilled iron workers, skilled craftsmen is there, and the only ones that have the capabilities to deliver the next generation of skilled craftsmen is organized labor, the building trades. You know, we have 150 training centers across North America. We can ramp those up. We can deliver to the job sites literally tens of thousands of iron workers. But they have to give us the opportunity to do that, and that's what business is coming back to recognize. You know, it's a funny thing with business when you talk about, you know, is there union prejudice out there? Without a doubt. But value overcomes that. You know, when you look at, you know, we do about 35% of the work for the Koch brothers. Now, you know, they're positioned on things, but guess what? When it comes to getting their jobs done at their plants, what do they want? They want the best skilled people to get that job done for them, and that's the iron workers, and that's what we sell. And the value that we have will overturn those prejudices because our members always deliver when they get to the job site. All we need to do is get past that initial step and get them the opportunity to audition. You are in the arts. You audition many times. When our members get that chance, guess what? They deliver, and they get the jobs after that.
Kathy, those corporate captains can't afford not to use us. But here, again, I think is the seminal point. You've got to educate people. People, salesmen have a bad rap. You know, you think of a salesman, they're just peddlers. A huge instrument of sales is education. And what we've done is assembled a very small team, but that small team engages that leadership. People like the Koch brothers and tells them what we bring to task. And you know what? It's so gratifying because now you're seeing light bulbs going off. You know, Walt Wise addressed the Construction Users Roundtable last year, and these are the big boys. This is corporate America on steroids. And he went through, and he told the story of why he's an iron worker. He talked about our safety, but then he delved into our training facilities and our capacity to train people to be safe, world-class iron workers. And you could see the light bulbs are going off like a Christmas tree. You know, it's appealing to the value in the marketplace. And you're right, hell yeah. Do we run across anti-union people? Every day. No question about it. But let me tell you a quick story, if
sure.
I may.
Absolutely.
We were having the construction people, the industrial maintenance people from Tampa Electric. And for years we've wanted to get them into our training facility to show off and boast a little bit and brag about what we can do. And we finally did it a couple weeks ago. And the conversation on the parking lot walking in to the training facility in Tampa, Florida was, well, you know, keep in mind that, you know, we're a merit shop environment. We just go with best value and there's no promises here. And, you know, thanks for having us, but we're not going to stick around too long. And after they had spent 4 hours in the ironworker training facility in Tampa, Florida, and the head of construction for Tampa Electric had spent an hour in a welding booth right next to a certified welding inspector teaching him how to weld, and they had a sandwich and they talked about what we could do together. They walked out. You know what the half-hour conversation was in the parking lot afterwards, after 4 hours at the Ironworker Training Center in Tampa, was, how do we get these guys in our plants?
They didn't know about us before, but they do now. Sales work, and a big part of sales is education.
The success formula for anything, and then I do want to go back to Walter, when you said that if you're unhappy about anything that you see where you live, you need to call your representative and let them know. But before I go into that, the success formula for anything, marketing and PR, and that's what you're doing now. You
well,
see, iron workers, they're there, and it's already established, an iron worker, that's 10%. Now, 90% is getting the word out, and it's recognition, exposure, repetition, and stay the course, and be educated enough and be well-informed enough to cite example after example. And what comes to my mind right now is the Iron Fest that all of you iron workers, did you show up at the Iron Fest in Mackinac in August, early August? Did either one of you attend?
No, I wasn't able to attend this year, but it's a great event that they do have in Mackinac there. But coming up just towards the end of September, we have our every 2 years we have our international competition for outstanding apprentices. And we're having about 75 apprentices up in Toronto in about 3 weeks that will be demonstrating the skills that they learned through an apprenticeship, the skills that they have that they can bring to the job site, and it's just a great opportunity to show what the young men and women of this country can do when they're given the opportunity to learn a great craft and to put that education to use.
And there was, Kathy, a representative of the Iron Workers Impact Program up there. Chuck Decker, our regional director that covers that part of the country, attended, and, you know, he's an iron worker. He's got dogged determination in everything he does, and he really enjoys getting up there and mixing with his brothers and sisters and telling them about what the iron workers are doing on a grand scale and what Impact does.
Iron workers and what you're doing today, you're offering a new genre, a new category for people to think about when they're planning the best of the rest of their lives. In what I said earlier, iron workers are a breed unto themselves, they're visionaries, co-creators of structures that without iron workers would not be standing today. I don't think that people think about that. I'm looking out across at the buildings that are in the beautiful pond and everything, the streets, the bridges. Without the iron workers, nothing would be created. And they are little teddy bears, you know that, but just creative in what they're doing. But Walter and Kevin, I got to go back to, I want to digress, when you said that people aren't really doing anything about all of the stuff that needs rebuild, the bridges, the roads, whatever. They don't know who to contact. For example, if I may just share this with you, I'm on the National Council the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. And on the air, I will say over and over again, nothing's going to happen. You see, the big guys want to delve into our Social Security and Medicare. And I'm saying, get your sticky paws out. We earned it the old-fashioned way. We worked for it. And the one thing that we constantly remind everyone is to call a telephone number, and I don't know if you have one, that you could call this number and you will be in touch with the legislators in your area and the elected officials in Congress, in the White House, and to voice your unhappiness. And this is what I usually get. Oh, I don't want Big Brother to know about me. Hey, honey, Big Brother already knows about you. But my point is this. If none of us call, if we just sit here and run with the herd, we're telling our elected officials that they're doing a good job. and they don't do anything. And they just sit there and say, well, I guess it's okay. We're doing our job. So when you alluded to that we could call, what and most people don't have the language. What would they say if I were to call Durbin or Kirk or some of the other officials in my area? What would I say to them about a structure that I saw could be dangerous to the public? What is the commentary?
Basically, it's a simple message, Kathy. It's fix this bridge. You know, we held over 30-some rallies around the country at different bridges that are deteriorating to bring that to the public's interest. And the public recognizes, the public sees the problem. We got to get the message in through to Congress and basically the American public in general. We got to become more activists. We got to go back to our roots of being involved. You know, we got to be contact those representatives, know who those representatives are. Every local union we have sends out to its members information regarding positions that their legislators take and how that affects them in the workplace so they can make an informed decision about who to vote for, who to pick up that phone and call. We do this. We've been doing this since the very beginning of the Iron Workers, and we continue on that. But the public needs to understand that they take too much for granted that all these things just happen to them. If it wasn't for activists, and if it wasn't for labor activists, you know, the public doesn't understand child labor laws didn't come about because the employers decided, oh, that's a bad thing to do. We don't want to hire children as laborers. It came about because the public forced that. And when you look at public education, the same type thing. Public education doesn't become because leaders decided we need everybody to have education. It became because we forced the issue to the front. The same with the 40-hour work week, safety in the workplace, our benefit packages. You look at Social Security or in Canada, social insurance and Medicare. That helped create the middle class of Canada and the U.S. Because just as a note, Canada also celebrates a common Labor Day holiday with us in the United States. So when I talk about Labor Day, it is truly a North American holiday. But we have to have activists out there that want to get to those, that want to show up, that want to vote. That's the one power how we override the vast billions and billions of dollars that's pumped into the political system now. It still comes down to one person, one vote. And we need to, and the only power we have is the people going to the polls. And that's what we've promoted. That's what we dedicate part of our organization to doing is political action. And we work with both sides of the aisle as far as political action on that. What we go for is issues that affect us as working men and women, that affect us as iron workers.
Do you have in place, I'm thinking of all of the kids that are graduating now, and then we're going to talk about women in the field. Do you have a plan of action? Do you have a committee that presents ironworking possibilities, or think of it as a career for the high schoolers that are thinking about, well, is it going to be college or am I going to go to the Dom Pérignon?
We have, you know, like I said, we have 150 training facilities across North America. Each of those joint apprenticeship and training committees, they participate in local job fairs to get the word out to high school students, to the public at large, as far as the opportunities that could be available to them as a skilled craftsman, as a skilled iron worker. So we rely on the local unions. Those are our representatives out there in every community across North America.
Listening to all of this, guys, I'll tell you what you all need is more exposure. Exposure, exposure, exposure. Now, may I digress? How did women get into ironworkers? We already know your passion about collective bargaining and how important it is to the education. How on earth can anyone grow in anything if they haven't a clue about the background, the vision? Are you futuristic? Are you a visionary? How did women get their little toe into ironworkers?
Well, that's very interesting, Kathy. I've returned this past fall from an event in Sacramento were for women in construction. We had 121 ironworker women attend that conference, the most of any craft there far. And that's what we learned from them is how they got involved in the trade, what helps, what will facilitate more women getting involved in the trade. And it was a lot of unique stories there. And the unique stories of how it changed their lives. Many of them were single mothers, single parents, and how it changed their life to be able to provide for their families. But, you know, we've had women iron workers going back. We have women iron worker retirees that entered the trade. A lot of times they learn about the opportunities from iron workers through whatever, through shopping, through anything, through just friendships that have happened. But it is a viable trade for women. We're doing a lot more now to reach out to various women organizations to promote women in the trade, and we'll be looking at starting shortly basically a pre-apprenticeship for women so they can get the basic background and orientation of what an iron worker does, the type of work he does, and to help them make a decision about to come into our apprenticeship.
Now, they do have to go through the four-year apprenticeship.
Yes, they have to learn the trade just like everybody else. They have to be a good, productive, safe iron worker in the field.
You know, when Walt came back from that conference, I was chatting with him, and he said the interesting point was they don't want to be called women iron workers. They want to be called iron workers.
But
there was a really great little, it was a very brief article in the Engineering News Record earlier this year, and it was dedicated to women in construction, and they interviewed an iron worker, and she was the daughter of an iron worker, and the dad had dissuaded her, and I think her brother was an iron worker and said, hey, this is way too tough, and she said, I'm going to prove it to you that I can do it, and she's a journeyman iron worker to this day.
Yeah, one of the great things coming out of that conference, Kathy, you know, there's always the politically correct as far as gender, and the one message loud and clear from them is, we are iron workers, and we are journeymen. Journeyman is a status. It's not a gender.
Yeah.
Log on, www.ironworkers.org. Let me give that to you again, ironworkers.org. And then follow all of the prompts. And it's something that you truly, truly need to think about. Now, one other thought came to me.
Kathy, may I interject really quickly?
Sure.
You've got to download the Ironworker app. Go to the App Store and download the Ironworker app. Just go, if you have an Android product, go to Google Play and type in Ironworker, and it'll come up. It's a free app. And if you're a Mac user, go into the App Store and type in Ironworker, and it'll come up and download your free app. And it's we just launched it a month ago. And it's good. It's going to continually get better, but everybody out there needs to download their Ironworker app.
Now, the good news, all of you out there, this show is being archived, and it stays in the archives for time and all eternity. And if you're just tuning in now, by the way, I did not give out the guest call-in number. I didn't want any interruption. And the important thing to know is that you could log on blogtalkradio.com/Kathy Watson, CathiWatson, and click on August 29th. And I have another surprise for both of you. This show is going to be replayed on September 5th because we're still in the Labor Day movement, and I wanted the audience on Friday, because we get a different audience each Friday, to hear you over and over again. Unfortunately, in all of my research, the human interest span is 8 seconds. So when I say repetition, 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 iron workers, a noble profession, over and over again, and then you have to be able to substantiate to really give them the guts of what iron workers are all about. Now, let me ask you one question, and this is, I don't know why I didn't do it before. With females, is there any segment in iron workers when they're coming in as an apprentice, is there any part or phase of ironworking that is not advised for women?
Not at all. They
really?
Go through the same curriculum that all ironworkers do. They have the same requirements to become a journeyman, and it's like every ironworker, they get to then at that time they can specialize in any branch of the trade they look. We see a variety of women in all positions, all aspects of the trade, out from structural work as connectors, welders, reinforcing ironworkers, the curtain wall ironworkers, the ornamental. There's no part of the trade that excludes women.
You got to get some of those women go into business for us, Kathy. We need a lot of women-owned businesses.
That is awesome. Kevin, did I send you the book choices?
If you did, I don't recall, Kathy.
Oh, yes, choices.
Oh, yes, yes, of course you did, yes, yes.
Okay, now, I have to tell you.
Excellent book.
It's nonfiction. And Bonnie Rooks, Chapter 7, shows no sign of retiring. Steel Mill Mama. She was the oldest steel worker in America. And it says, what does a childhood of hard work, sterling work ethics, pumpkin pie, and the love of old Western novels have to do with choices and the determination to keep on keeping on? It is my pleasure to introduce you to Bonnie Rooks, Steel Mill Mama. 1926 was an amazing year. On September 27th, Bonnie was born. It was the year that gave birth to possibly the oldest working, steel working woman in the U.S., Canada, and the world. And she grew up during the Depression, and she made up her mind that she was going to work in the steel mills. And she was the only mother-daughter team working in the steel mill in Mansfield, Ohio. And she passed away several years ago. But what an inspiration. What an inspiration. If you have that desire, if you have that fire in the belly, log on to ironworkers.org or tell them again how to get the app, Kevin.
All you do is take your Android device, tap on Google Play that's already pre-installed on your phone, your smartphone, or your tablet. And once you get into Google Play, there's a search field and type in ironworker. And it will come up. It's a free app. Tap install, and you're on your way. Now, if you're using an Apple product, go fire up your phone or your iPad, tap on App Store, upper right-hand corner, type in Ironworker, hit search. It'll come up, install, and again, you're on your way. It's a really nice app. Every Ironworker should have them. Anybody associated with the Ironworkers should install their Ironworker app.
You're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio. Email kathystudio@sbcglobal.net. You could call me on my landline, 847-882-8717. And I love to get letters, Post Office Box 95913, Hoffman Estates, Illinois, 60195. And then log on to my websites, KathyWatsonSpeaks.com and SimplyAgeless.net. And you'll see me wearing the Ironworker shirt. And I invited Eric Dean and the others to call in and to share their passion. You know, there is a passion. There's a love that generates from, you exude it. When you're an ironworker, when I talk to them, their faces just light up because they know that they have created a structure that without them would not be standing today. We're almost at the end of the show. You've been listening to Walter Weiss, the General President of Iron Workers International, and Kevin Hilton, the CEO of Impact. Any final thoughts?
Well, if I could, Kathy, we certainly appreciate the opportunity to be with you this morning. And as we go into the Labor Day holiday, it is a day to rest, to be with your friends and family, and to celebrate all that labor has accomplished. But we want you to take a moment just when you're celebrating to reflect on why you're celebrating and what this day is. It didn't come about easily. And you look at the history of organized labor, we had people died in the past to give us the ability to do the things that we do today, to fight for the rights that we have to do today. There were massacres in a variety of places across the United States and Canada. There in Chicago, when you look at the tragedy of Haymarket, and you look at the Republic Steel massacres, these were people died in order to fight for the rights that we have today as workers, as working Americans. And I just want to take a moment to reflect on that. Remember the fight for equality and fair wages and health benefits and a retirement with dignity is not over, and it is not won. And it takes us, each and every one of us, every day to make sure that we can pass on a better life for future generations to come. So I just want to give my sincere thanks to you, to everyone for the work they do, and best wishes for a safe and enjoyable Labor Day.
Thank you, Walter. Kevin, you're on.
Kathy, I just, we live in a crazy world, and I want to bring everybody's thoughts this Labor Day weekend to a journeyman iron worker. He's out of the Nashville, Tennessee local, who went to war and fought proudly for our country, fought the tyranny of ignorance, and he came back and he's struggling mightily with post-traumatic stress disorder. And he came into an organization called the Iron Workers. And they brought him in like a brother. They treated him like a brother. He found the camaraderie and the support network that he needed to deal with the stress of having borne the battle. And now he lives a dignified life. He works hard. And he can reflect on what a great, great nation we have. If you ever get the chance, you can see his video that was co-sponsored by the Iron Workers Impact Program and the Tennessee Valley Authority.
What's the video? How do we get it?
It's you can get it off of our website, and it's really very, very inspirational. But, when you're sitting back having a glass of iced tea or an ice cold beer, this weekend, that's another way to really reflect on the good work that's done in America and in Canada by the iron workers and their employers.
It's the brotherhood. It's the brotherhood and the camaraderie. Tell us a little bit about hard hats to helmets. We have a minute left.
There's a program. General President Wise is very close to it. We're closely involved with it. Let's get our returning veterans good, dignified jobs that pay well with benefits and a pension at the end of many, many years of service, and bring them into the iron workers through the apprenticeship program.
Yeah. Helmets to hard hats, the iron workers. We say thank you with jobs, good paying jobs, good family sustaining jobs.
All right, guys, we're just about at the end. Thank you so much. Now, remember, in about 20 minutes, you could log on to blogtalkradio.com/Kathy Watson, click on August 29th, and you will hear the show. And be sure and email all of you that are hearing my voice. Email the whole world. This is one way to get the message out there. Happy Labor Day to both of you and to the world.
Happy Labor Day, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It is a celebration of all men and women who have dedicated their lives to defining their ingenuity, their skills, cleverness in planning an extravagant landscape. And let me remind you again, iron workers are a breed unto themselves. They're visionaries co-creators of structures that without iron workers would not be standing today. Happy Labor Day. Take a moment to reflect on their ingenuity, their futuristic vision, and make it a safe holiday. Until we meet again, remember to always be in your best elements. Au revoir.